Senator, thank you. I know how busy your schedule is. Thank you for carving it.
Sure. Yeah, it's insane around here. No comment. I'm sorry, what was your question?
The name of the narrator is Senator Mark Begich. The name of the interviewers are Paul McCarthy and Charles Bulow. The place of the interview is Senator Mark Begich's office in Washington, D.C. Date of the interview is June 10th.
9th.
2009, Ted Stevens Oral History, Side A, Tape 1. So let's talk about...
And the big tobacco debate's occurring on the Senate floor as we do this.
Oh, wow. So, thank you again.
Just a little bit of... Right? Because someday someone might look at it and say, what's going on that day? Right? Get that little map that says what's gone on that day in history.
Right. Talk about... Senator Stevens' significant accomplishments. What do you think his major successes were?
Well, I think he had, one thing his office was known for quite a bit was his constituent work, working with individuals on their, as small issues as where's my Social Security check to major policy issues. But when you look at the larger issues from the Stevens-Magnuson Act with regards to fisheries, and when you talk about fisheries today in this country, and people want to know what's the most sustainable fisheries literally in the world, Alaska is what comes to mind to most people. And so I think in a lot of ways that's an interesting legacy, because it not only is important for Alaska's economy and what's going on in Alaska, but it also today provides about 62% of the wild fish caught in this country. So it's significant in the volume, and it's a huge export for us. But the world is touched by it. I mean, if you think of, next time you go into McDonald's and you get a, one of their fish sandwiches, more than likely 90% of the pollock that they utilize comes from Alaska for that food product. So every day people are having a fish sandwich in a McDonald's, probably has no clue that it's Alaskan connected. And I think that's because of sustainable levels of fisheries that we have here. There's a variety of things when you think of the other one, which is, I think still it's in its early days, and I think the story is still out on it. As time progresses, I think it will be more solidified, and that's the Denali Commission. And why I say the story's still out or the verdict's still out on it is because it's early. It's been around for a few years. He came up with the concept of how do you help impoverished communities of Alaska and rural communities ensure they have the infrastructure and deliver it in a way that's a very efficient delivery system. The Denali Commission is that. But it's in the last few years, it's kind of had its ups and downs, but I think as more and more people see its value, its efficiency, the work it's done around clinics and dealing with energy issues now, they're seeing how well it works. And I think as time progresses, that will continue to be one of those evolving legacies that he triggered, invested time in, and people then have seen it. And even though in its early days it was the idea, putting money into it, but now you're seeing some of the results, meaning projects are completed, results of the people who end up going through the facilities. So you're starting to see and go, oh, that's what that is. So you create a generation around the issue. And I think so, the story hasn't been completed on that. But I think as time progresses, it will, and it'll be another one of those. Because I think, again, in a rural context, Alaska is so unique. This is one of those pieces of the puzzle that I think are going to be very powerful for us to talk about in years to come. And he had an impact to that. I think when you look at, I just came from a committee meeting on aviation, and in a lot of ways, again, Alaska, which is the pilot capital of the world when you think about aviation, but also it is where the unique new technologies are being tested. And I think the role that he had in the Commerce Committee, which deals with aviation, and I sit now in that committee, you can see the elements of that work that he did early on for those new programs, NextGen, which is a huge change in how aviation will work, started in Alaska because of unique flying and the technical difficulties of flying sometimes in Alaska. And now here I am sitting in that committee and listening to this and realizing that we were the cutting edge on that. And through Senator Stevens' work, that was, again, one of those seeds planted, and now the nation will benefit from it. Those are, you know, there's a lot when you think about it, if you even go back, way back to the modifications when the Alaska Native Land Claims actually passed in 71, but 71, 72, but really where Stevens was a critical piece of that was when all the corporations, not all, I shouldn't say all, when a sizable amount of the corporations were having financial difficulties. Because literally when the Claims Act was passed, we said, here's $1 billion and 44 million acres of land. Good luck. We wish you the best. Predominantly, the Alaska Native community was subsistence users. So to now have to run multi-million dollar corporations was a whole new process. And, you know, maybe not thought out as well as it could have, but then later years, the piece that made the difference was coming back, even though it was a small thing. It was the whole idea of the tax credits and so forth. Even though there was some criticism on that, it ensured the corporations survived. And today, you know, the regional corporations, the village corporations are huge in the sense of the economic engine they are, not only for our state, but for around the globe now. And the employment that's occurring now and seeing that piece of the equation.
You know, you talk a lot about some national issues. Mm-hmm. Do you think that his view, and I'm getting a little bit off script, and I promise not to do it much,
it's
his
okay.
view on Alaska Natives in the state was different than other Western states? And do you think that's something that will be remembered nationally as well as in the state? You talked about the tax benefit when there were mm-hmm. problems with the Native corporations, and you talked about the 8A benefits. Mm-hmm. Some of the other senators we've talked to have said that that's something that's very different than any approach that had been taken before.
I think so, but I think the 8A, for example, a lot of hard work that he put into 8As and modifying it to ensure the Alaska Native community was recognized for its uniqueness, that it's not a single owned individual business. It's a business that represents, in some cases, a few hundred people, in some cases, thousands. And because of that, it has unique issues. This one, in a lot of ways, the book still isn't finished on this. As we sit here today, there's Senate inquiries in regards to the 8As. But because the 8As, we had one today, TDX Corp, which I think they're St. Paul, if I remember right, corporation. They have a great story. You know, they are producing wind energy for their community in the sense of saving them money. But they also have now a wind energy business to export that through an 8A process. Having them bring that up at the meeting we had today where we had tribal leaders from across the country and we had TDX there, it was a very interesting discussion because obviously they never said the word 8A until I said, well, that's because 8A. And everyone kind of laughed and said, and because the tribes, it's all common business. But what was interesting was for the senators that were there, it was important education. So the book hasn't been completed on 8As. We have some challenges ahead of us, but I think the way he laid it out was, the goal was, I think, and at least from my perspective, how I viewed he was doing this, was there was great potential, but access was not getting, the doors weren't opening. And the 8A piece kind of forced the door open. Now, the advantage of that is, it helped Alaska Native Corporations, but it also helped is and will be helping in the long term other tribes across this country. And as they form their 8As, as I've met with senators who have 8As in their own communities, who are now starting to understand what that all means, and as they start evolving, that's an important piece of the equation. So I think that's an important one long term. The question we will have over the next 6 months or so will, is the 8A model sustainable in the political environment we live in today? I think the answer is yes, because they can prove what I think Senator Stevens was attempting to do, and I think he has succeeded to do, and that is it's giving an opportunity where sometimes the doors are not open because of the way the system works. And what he did is crack the door open, but he basically said, now you're on your own, prove yourself up. And I think several of them have done a very good job.
Legacy of Senator Stevens, major accomplishments, 4 decades in office. You talked about a couple of things, Magnuson-Stevens, you talked about Denali Commission, mm-hmm. which is important. Talk a little bit about his legacy. If there's not accomplishments just that you want to add, just how do you think people in the state and in the nation are going to view the senator when the story of him is written and told over the next 10 years?
Well, I think, you know, in some cases the story has already been partially told, and that is he came into office in 68 when the state was very new. Even though we had been around, in some cases people would view thousands and thousands of years, but as a state, very new. And he came in at a time when most people had never really understood Alaska or been here. And when I say most people, today, you know, you think back then and say, oh, geez, are there going to be cruises to Alaska? The answer would be, no, we got to, you go up to Alcan. That's the cruise you're going to have for the next week and a half, driving on dirt roads and whatever might occur. And the biggest cruise you would have is the military rotation, that was it. So it came at a time when the infrastructure of the state was critical, ensuring that we had the base, water, sewer, making sure the military component was recognized as we are a strategic piece of the national defense of this country, recognizing we have some resources here that have been exploited by others and not really to the benefit of Alaskans as individuals. I think he understood that. And he used what some would describe around here today, an old style of politics that is basically fading. It's very interesting, the dynamics of what's happened in the Senate. In the last 4 years, two and a half years, 30% of the Senate has changed hands. So it's a very changing dynamic here. But it came in at a time when you could make your point and earn the respect by garnering, putting the issue out there, but also working with your colleagues and, strongly in some cases. In his case, he at times, as people always would comment, he would be very aggressive about some of his positioning. But at the end, the result was he was trying to make his point. He would call it passion. Some might call it anger. Some might call it aggressive. But the goal was he was trying to make his point about Alaska. And in those days also, it was kind of a, I remember he had some cufflinks someone actually gave me. And it was, his motto was, we don't care how, I think it was like, we don't care how they do it outside or something like that. I can't remember exactly. Yeah, that was his cufflinks. And I actually have a pair of those. But I mean, that's kind of that attitude, which helped us get the resources that the state enjoys today is the kind of the basic core infrastructure that has given us kind of a launching pad. Like, for example, I think the last battle on BRAC on our military bases, a few years ago, in my view, might be the last battle, because Alaska is viewed very, very differently by the military today than it was in 68. They saw it as an outpost far beyond their use. Today they see it as a very critical strategic component. Now, maybe the military would have come to that conclusion over time, but I think he might have accelerated it. And I think the last BRAC battle accelerated it to potentially, I think, to where BRAC may have impact in the future, but minimal. Like we, just because they're, if you look around the military base today, they're increasing the capacity. When it came to the reductions in this budget cycle that occurred, actually Alaska gained almost $300+ million this cycle. We didn't get a reduction or elimination of things. We've had some issues with our ground missile defense, but that's a global issue, not an Alaskan issue. But they see it as part of the global answer. So it's very, I think in 68, yeah, to kind of kick and scream about it, I think that's what he did very well and brought attention and maybe accelerated some of that, which was good.
Talk about some of the frustrations that he may have or some of the things that, you feel he started that you will try to carry on. I know that that's... Anwar is the issue that most people will talk about. But are there that one and any other issues that you come to?
Well, I think the Denali Commission is one. I think, you know, ensuring that it is a continuation. It's not just a moment in time program because it has great value. And so I think that's an important one. I think he had a strong interest in aviation from a personal perspective. Actually, he and I had that to our own families, and I think he saw Alaska as kind of the test ground for new technologies, and we're now seeing that implemented on a kind of a nationwide level. And I think that was something he felt very strong about, and in a strong interest to me, and because we have a probably a, not only a professional connection on it, but a personal connection on it. I think the issue of ensuring that the Defense Department continues to recognize Alaska as strategic, I think in one way, I feel like he knew that was, he had finally reached that moment, but now you kind of put the cream on it. You know, you got the base done, you got the frame done, you got the filling all in. I think in some ways you'd want to put the final touch on it. And I think that's one thing we're doing through the Armed Services Committee. Oddly enough, it's the first time an Alaskan has served on the Armed Services Committee since 1968. The last person who served there was Bartlett, oddly enough. And yet Armed Services Committee is so critical to Alaska. His work on defense was done through appropriations, which is year by year. The value being on services, you can do sustainable long-term because you're about authorization, you're about legislation, you're about policy. It's a different, so you can take some of these ideas that were annual ideas he had and implement them into a full, sustainable program or long-term existence, which I think is important. I think those are, again, in fisheries, I think he saw a new emerging challenge, which in a lot of ways, and I, said this during the campaign with him, that it was a struggle for some of the people who have been here so long to understand this new emerging issue, which is climate change. And the fisheries industry, as well managed as it is, how great the law is, the problem is acidification of the waters, those issues that are out of his control when he was here, and an emerging issue, I think it would, just my own interpretation, I think it would be frustrating for him to see all this great work of sustainable fisheries, and now the issue of acidification, the warming of the waters, is having such an, or potentially will have an impact on fisheries, that comes with an issue in a lot of ways he was learning more about, where in my generation it is common to talk about it, climate change. So it's a very, I think that would have been an interesting to see how he would have dealt with climate change, recognizing something that is a legacy of his is now at risk because of something out of his control. I think it's a very interesting piece of a puzzle here.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I think, in general, I think I said a lot of it about, kind of the lay of the land of the legacy and what he has done. And I think in a lot of ways, every elected official has kind of their own piece to the puzzle, but his span of so many years that, when I think about when he started to serve in 68, I was 6 years old. So, you don't have that kind of generational connection in a lot of ways to your elected official in most states and the impact you have because it's such a small state. And I think in a lot of ways when people look back, it won't be about, was it a new clinic or was it a new airport or was it a new road? I think it would be more about in 68, those early years especially, 68 to about mid-80s, I think that period of time, his impact was transformational to the state. And then what started to happen in the mid-80s on is a lot of things he kind of put into place started to happen. And it started to feed into other things that really wasn't about him making those that next stage happened, but he seeded it which then creates its own in a lot of ways. And so I think that's what people look back will say, I think, you know, when, you know, people will probably ask the question, you know, why did we have the Stevenson or Magnuson-Stevens Act? You know, why did we have Next Gen? You know, who thought of these things? Or why were they important? And I think what we'll see is these will be not only local, state, but national impacts that they have.
Thank you for your time.